Welcome to our conversation on the important film, Death by Design. This is a film that's already changed the world and is continuing to do so. The dirty secret of our digital addiction. It's no longer such a secret thanks to this movie and a number of things like this that have been released. I'm Dr. Deborah Davis, the founder and president of Environmental Health Trust. We are a 501c3 nonprofit established in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And we're a scientific think tank that publishes research, educates communities, and works toward meaningful policy changes to protect the public and wildlife from environmental health threats. It is simply a thrill today to have the director and producer of this incredible film, Death by Design, with us today. Sue Williams has produced and directed a number of critically acclaimed feature documentaries about China for national broadcasts on PBS and Frontline. She also directed two highly praised biographies on Eleanor Roosevelt and Mary Pickford for the PBS series American Experience. Sue Williams' films have been broadcast in more than 25 countries and appeared in festivals around the world. So we're very grateful to have her here today. This film has won a number of awards, including the Boston Globe Filmmakers Fund Award. Cal Weens of iFixit is also featured in the film and will be joining us in the second half for the discussion. He is a consumer activist and the CEO of iFixit, an online repair community that is dedicated to reducing waste and promoting the reuse. And he promotes the right to repair, stating that, "I think technology will make life on Earth better if we care to do it right." We think that he's on the right track, and we're delighted that he's overseen open source repair instructions in 11 languages, enabling millions of people to continue to extend the life of their equipment. And as you'll see, and as you've seen in the movie, what we have with electronic waste is a devastating impact on many nations already. Notably, the Chinese are now exporting their electronic waste to Africa. So I'm also delighted to have Theodora Scarrato with us. Theodora is the executive director of Environmental Health Trust and has played a critical role in helping to curate this film series and was one of the first people to tell me that, you know, you must see this movie. And she's absolutely right. I'm so glad so many of you, more than 1,000 of you out there, have seen the film with us. And now, without further ado, I'd like to begin the questions with Sue. How did you get involved in the whole issue of sustainable technology?
Wow. Well, actually, it was really simple. I knew nothing about it. But a friend of mine who works a lot in China in the environmental funding environmental NGOs in China, introduced me to Ma Jun, and who opens the film and is an extraordinary man. And we met for tea one afternoon in New York, and he was telling me about his work, and I knew nothing, really nothing about all this, although I was very concerned about the environment, but I knew nothing specifically about electronics. And after I met him, I thought, I've got to make a film about this man and the work he's doing. And it all kind of started from there and, of course, grew and changed. And but that was the initial kind of instigation.
Well, we're glad to hear that Apple has made some changes. But as far as you know, have they made any change in their statement that they do not disclose their supply chain?
I haven't read their corporate social responsibility page of their website. Kyle may be more up to date on this. You know, wording is so important. I read those things, and if you really parse it carefully, you can see how they skirt issues and skirt facts. So I think Apple is probably in an even more difficult situation in China now under Xi Jinping than even 5 years ago.
Wow.
Apple has expanded their disclosure of their suppliers more than they did when the film was made. I posted a link to their, you know, an initial supplier list. What they don't do is tell you who their suppliers are and who their suppliers are. And you really go down the chain. And yeah, Apple audits all of the facilities that are on this list. And I honestly think that those are probably some of the best facilities in China. But you get a few steps down the chain where there's not as much attention being paid. And that's where you really get into challenges.
And as you know, some of the decorations that that children are using for Halloween and Christmas with those little mercury batteries in them, those are manufactured in China as well. And they come with no warnings whatsoever on the fact that they may be used by a three-year-old who could swallow it and be poisoned as a consequence. And that's why it was so thrilling for me to be able to see my old friends, Ted Smith and Mandy Haas, who've been real pioneers working on this for well over two decades, probably actually maybe close to four decades, because it was Mandy and the old California Occupational Safety and Health Group that first identified the serious risks of the women who were making the microchips in the IBM factories in Silicon Valley. And as you show in the movie, what happened is, as soon as they figured out that people might be sick and dying there in their factories and in Silicon Valley, they shipped it all offshore to China, where we do not have the same stringent protections for workers that are in this United States. So I'm going to turn it over now to Theodora, and I want to thank you again. I hope that we have a chance to talk sometime later, Sue, because I'm a great fan, and I really think you've done the world a great service. And the fact of the matter is, what you've done and what Kyle is doing is pushing public policy here. You really are changing things. People are waking up to the fact that you shouldn't have to have planned obsolescence for this equipment, and that it's unusually wasteful, not only in terms of the hazardous waste accumulating, but also in terms of what it means for energy, in terms of production, recycling, et cetera. So thank you
so much. It's really a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Great, so thank you, Dr. Davis. And for people who are on the call, please put your questions in the chat. I have a couple questions I'm going to start with. So what stories didn't make it into the film? What was cut that you wish you could have kept in? And I could have watched for hours more.
I think the story that really hurt to take out, we filmed a lot more in Endicott, New York, where the IBM factory was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we saw Toni Schürling, the nurse, and her husband who had lymphoma. They lost their son to lymphoma. But we actually filmed a 16-year-old neighbor, she was 16 at the time, who was diagnosed with lymphoma while we were filming and was going through radiation and treatment. And, you know, it was certainly seemed clear to everybody that this was also as a result of having grown up in Endicott with all the toxic chemicals in the groundwater and in the soil. And it was really hard to watch her go through this journey, and she was so brave. That was really hard to take out. We just, it sort of took us down a whole other path that we felt we didn't have time, and that people might just find was too much. So that was one. There was more stuff in China with workers. They were extremely difficult interviews to shoot for security reasons.
Yeah, the technical challenges around filming were really hard. So there were some things where we had it, but the footage wasn't quite good enough.
Yeah.
We were there, we saw things, we were like, we wish, and you know, the camera was pointing the wrong direction or something. We're like, but they just like emptied this pipe into the river.
Right, right. And also we filmed in a couple of villages. One village is in, because she tied so well into the story of the suicides at Foxconn. But I think that was, those were the two main things probably.
So many tragedies that are hidden when we get that shiny package, like when you have them hold it up, it was just beautifully told. I'm sorry to hear about, I mean, I imagine there are many more people in Endicott that are not, you weren't able to feature their stories, right, but we saw the houses.
Right. With all the people who died. Yeah. And it was, you know, it was all around the time the court case was being decided. So we filmed a lot more around. Oh, actually, that just reminded me of something else that didn't make it in, which is some of the earlier court cases from Endicott, with unspeakably and horribly deformed children, born with terrible birth defects, that was also involved in litigation. And it was, anyway, for legal reasons and other reasons, we didn't include those, but they were pictures that I've never seen before.
In the film, you talk about how the manufacturing process protects the chips and the products, but not the consumer. And it hasn't changed.
Or the people making them, you know,
you're right, not the workers. The
workers. Another thing that was happening as we were finishing this, and Kyle may be more up to date on this as well, but the Samsung court cases of the workers, the women who were filing charges against Samsung, mm-hmm. claiming that their exposure to chemicals in the factory in Korea, they won their cases. And that was an absolutely huge thing. We didn't follow that story. We really couldn't get into Korea as well. But there was an awful lot there. I'm sure there is even now an awful lot going on in these areas.
The issue of the clouds, how the more aerosol particulates in them hold more water, and the result is extreme weather, because it's not going to rain until it's full. So can you talk more about that? And that was fascinating. That was new to me as well.
That's the work of Kimberly Prather at UCSD, who's been actually incredibly busy in COVID, because of course she studies aerosols and COVID is an aerosol-borne illness. Yeah, she's developed this way of analyzing droplets in the clouds, and is very concerned that that's why we're seeing, you know, drought in some areas and flooding in others, because the meteorological systems are all messed up with the heavy metals inside the water droplets. And she's, if you go to her website, you know, Kimberly Prather, UCSD, people can find out a lot more about her work. She's doing a lot of stuff with making simulations of the ocean, and how she makes models of how the ocean evaporates and how things get carried through the atmosphere. And again, I feel a little out of date on that because I haven't kept up with her research, but I have been following her on Twitter, where she's very vocal about the aerosols and COVID.
Thank you. I'm going to put that as a link when we send this out. The replay, I have a series of resources for people, like the Death by Design website, China Labor Watch, Coalition for American Electronics Recycling, Electronics Walks, and so forth. And I'll add that. I had a question before we clicked the record button. You were talking about people choosing between making chips and growing food. Can you talk about that?
Well, I don't know if other people have been seeing these reports about Taiwan, which is facing a severe water challenge. And they use a lot of water in their agriculture, as most places do. But of course, they have the largest semiconductor factory in the world there that provides a huge proportion of the world's chips. And that also takes a great deal of water. And so there are now debates apparently in Taiwan about, are we going to have food or are we going to have chips? Because there's not going to be enough water for both as they exist now. And I think about that when I hear about, you know, we're going to bring manufacturing back here. Where are we going to bring it?
Arizona.
Yeah, put it in Arizona, where some plants already are. Where they, you know, they pick the states with the least amount of water, or you know, where it's really just terrible for local communities and the environment, and they put these plants there, and they give all sorts of tax breaks to the companies, and of course, it ends up with the local population not having enough water. So, I'm really, when I hear this talk about bringing manufacturing back here, I mean, it's not very likely because of that, but also, I mean, Kyle and I have been in southern China, in the belly of the electronics manufacturing beast. It's vast. I mean, it's really hard for an American, unless you've seen it, it's hard to imagine. You just drive for miles and miles and miles, and it's one factory after another after another.
Yeah.
And so they have this very intricate infrastructure there,
right,
which sustains, you know, if this factory's run out of bolt number 23A, they know they can just run over to the other side of Shenzhen and pick a load up, or if they need a wire, that, you know, whatever, it's all there. And yeah, it's devastated the environment, as we make clear in the film. And it's just on a scale with a number of workers that just, it is unimaginable here in America.
Yeah, it's a huge ecosystem, and trying to transplant that ecosystem and trying to transplant a piece of it, it's really hard. I mean, there's a reason Taiwan is not going to stop being the global semiconductor hub anytime soon. There's too much there. I think the water issue is really fascinating. Is I've talked with the chip manufacturers, and they'll always talk about how they're so much more water efficient than they used to be, and it takes 30% less water per wafer. And so I'm like, okay, so is your facility consuming less water this year than it did last year because you're more efficient? And the answer is never, and has never been, we're using less water, right? It's always more. Now they're making more chips, and they're more water efficient, but the amount of inputs to the system never ever goes down.
Yeah.
Wow. So before I press record, did you work together on this film, filming and doing interviews, or tell me more?
Kyle was an incredibly important contributor and really helped me understand electronics. And obviously he's featured, and iFixit is featured in the film, and worked with us on a very important shoot in China. But
yeah, this is Sue's film. I'm just a piece, a set piece. This is
she followed you with the camera as you did things.
Well, Kyle was incredibly helpful in our outreach and figuring out our messaging and, you know, what do we put on the site and promoting it. And so we were in touch a lot. But I think, you know, for better or worse, it's my baby, mm-hmm. and but a valuable, valuable contributor.
Yeah, we had a blast helping. But I mean, I learned a lot. I mean, there's so much I don't know about film production. It's fun watching a professional in action.
Well, I'm getting a lot of comments. I just want to say I found this documentary to be very excellent and so well done. And I encourage numerous people to watch. It has opened my eyes. I read her quote, and now I'm just saying it really has opened my eyes. And I've been sharing it with everyone. Is the subject of your film something PBS would like to air? Someone asked, and as well, what was the reception, and what's happening next with the film?
Well, it came out in 2016, so we did the festival circuit pretty actively. PBS did not want to air it. Apple was very upset when we were showing it at various festivals in California, Mill Valley, and I guess San Francisco. People called the.
Yeah, that was festivals. We did an Economist thing, right? And Apple was really upset about it.
Yeah, no, they didn't like it. And they called me a couple of times actually out of the blue to find out what I was doing. And I was so excited that someone from Apple would call me, because I thought maybe I'll finally get an interview with them, but that didn't happen. It is in international distribution with Gunpowder and Sky. It aired around the world on Al Jazeera, and then Bullfrog picked it up for educational, and now it's, as I was mentioning earlier, it seems like, you know, South African television wants it. It's sold pretty well around the world. I would say less well in America.
We don't want to know.
Yeah.
We don't want to know, but the history is so important, and it's happening now in different ways. It's just continuing on unless our eyes are on it and we're holding them accountable. Well, I got a couple questions here. So let me try to merge them together. One, are there presently available any ethically made desktop or laptop computers that can replace Apple with similar performance?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so I mean, we can take this piece by piece. It's hard to make a, you know, fully ethical product all the way through. The company who has done the best job of walking this through and really going all the way to their supply chain, paying workers a fair wage, is Fairphone. And I've gone through extensively their research, and I think it's safe to say that's a fair trade phone. They have the workers in China who are making the phone get paid above market rate, and the workers kind of get a vote where that money goes, whether it's in the worker kind of wellness programs or additional pay. They trace the minerals in the devices all the way to the mine, and they're proud that the minerals in their product come from the Congo, and they're making sure that the people who are mining them are doing it in a safe manner and saying, hey, let's support these local industries and let's, right, fair trade minerals all the way through. So really, really cool project. And they have a huge amount of research and analysis that's gone in all the way. Yeah. And you pick a material that's on the phone, and they've gone into detail and done the traceability. So they're really cool. There is not a laptop company that has gone to that level. There is a startup right now, Silicon Valley startup called Framework, that's making a modular repairable laptop, and it's just starting to ship this summer. And it's really exciting and cool. And they haven't done the like mineral level investigation that Fairphone did, but what they are doing is designing a laptop that's really meant to stand the test of time and be modular and repairable from the beginning. It's very slick. And they have, you know, a lot of people with extensive electronics industry experience. So we're excited to see where that goes.
So modular means that you can replace things and swap out the battery and swap out the pieces that are going to very quickly be ancient.
Exactly.
Yeah. We have to keep up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So we talked about green electronics. I guess one issue that was not the subject of the film, but I think is important to talk about, is what about the issue of the ecological impacts of access networks and data centers, cloud computing, what we're doing right now, mm-hmm. what and the climate impacts, the energy impacts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can't help a lot on that. Maybe Kyle, you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's significant. Data centers use a large amount of the world's energy. One nice thing about data centers, though, is that the manufacturers are incentivized to, the operators of the data centers are incentivized to be as energy efficient as they can. That's their major cost is electricity. And so, yes, using cloud services, you know, AI in the cloud, like it's using a large amount of electricity, but the Googles and Facebooks of the world do their absolute dangdest to keep those facilities efficient. Yeah. So it's kind of a question, do we as a species want to be doing this? Do I want to be able to search on Google? Do I want to be able to watch Netflix? Yes. And so I think that then takes us down a path of, well, how do we do it in the most responsible way possible? How do we get renewable energy in these? And then the servers that are going into the data centers, how do we make those last as long as possible? And again, generally, Google and Facebook and friends are incentivized to get the most out of their capital investment. So they're going to use the servers as long as they can until it makes economic and probably environmental sense to replace it. And also, I would say, because the hardware is centralized, it tends to be recycled in a much more kind of professional managed fashion than consumer electronics that kind of gets scattered to the seven winds, and you'll have children in, Agbog Bloshi mining them for copper. That's probably not happening with Google data center equipment.
Well, let's hop back to e-waste for a minute, because you covered a lot of the before and went into e-waste, but there's so much more to talk about there. I know that China is not accepting our recycling.
They don't want your trash anymore.
And I've certainly seen, I don't know if it's from a movie or the burning of the wires, the cords, in order to get the copper inside in countries in Africa.
Actually, Iguenu, where we filmed, It's hard to explain when you arrive in a new place, especially a small place like Guiyu. The government authorities know that you're there within about 5 minutes, no matter how discreet you are. And so our time in Guiyu, I spent a lot of time in the hotel while a Chinese cameraman was shooting for me because I just, you know, I stood out too much. And that was, Guiyu was going through this interesting transformation, which we talk about in the film, where it, you know, it was closing down, you know, the authorities were closing it down. They were going to send all of the little family recycling businesses, those were recycling businesses that you saw, to, you know, like huge buildings where they would have their own little areas in the buildings and they do their recycling under government control and sort of supervision. I don't know what happened because we couldn't really talk to anybody official in Guiyu. And I was just glad to get out of there actually. But
there's a lot of organized crime. It's a sketchy.
But it's dangerous. I mean, you could get arrested. I mean, yeah. You know, that's you just sort of have to stay one step ahead of. In fact, it's sort of interesting. I don't think you could make the film now because of facial ID and the way the Chinese are now so efficient in following you wherever you go. You know, you have to do everything with your phone. You have to pay for everything with your phone and, you know, get into everything with your phone. So I'm not sure that you could get into the places like the villages or Guiyu that we got into, you know, even just 5 years ago.
That's what we were told by Heather too.
Yeah. It's you know, you arrive somewhere and the kids see you. And then the kids are making a ruckus. And so the local party official comes and then it's kind of all over. But I digress from what your question was. So I don't really know what happened in Guiyu afterwards. After we left, obviously a lot of the e-waste business has gone to Africa. But Kyle, have you heard anything more about, because I'm sure that there is still e-waste. I mean, just knowing China, that there, it's still going on. It's
everywhere. I mean, I think what we've realized is this is not just like the US exporting our e-waste to China. It's like domestically generated electronics that they use. Like, who's, you know, Kenya doesn't have a domestic electronics recycling program. So what happens to all of these things? The fundamental problem is that the designers of the product have not, they have constructed the product in such a way that it's very expensive and material, you know, machinery and material intensive to recycle these things correctly. And so, you know, Apple is happy to sell laptops to Kenya, but they're not going to go and invest and set up a recycling center there. So, this phone is one of the most, it is made the most, you know, complex artifact as a species we have ever made. Out of all the elements on the periodic table, we use about 70 in manufacturing all things. 50 of those are in this phone.
Model of phone have you got there?
I have a Google Pixel 3a, which has a headphone jack. Huh? and it's reasonably repairable.
Sorry, but they actually taught me how to change the battery in my iPhone when we were working together.
Since we hung out together, back when we did the film, I had an iPhone and Apple removed the headphone jack and I switched to Android. Man, you'll pry my headphones out of my cold dead hands.
So what will it take to have a more sustainable phone in terms of from all the parts of the life cycle? Where's the best place to start and what do we need to ensure for accountability?
Yeah, I would know more about that, but I think it's more than just tinkering with a few metals and a few chemicals and a few ingredients in these things. It's a whole different way of thinking about how we consume, how we purchase, how we use, and how we consume, and how we toss. And, you know, maybe, I don't know if there's still the frenzy about the new iPhones that, you know, there used to be, you know, the long lines outside the doors. There probably still are.
There still are.
You know, it's, people don't think. I mean, we're still battling to have climate change be accepted science in this country. So it's really, really difficult to get people to care. And, until you understand that, you know, we and the earth are one thing, and, you know, if we fill it full of our crap, it's going to, you know, be crappy. And it's really simple. We just have to completely think the way we consume, rethink the way we consume. It's, you know, the circular economy and all these concepts which have been thought out but don't seem to catch on in the way that they need to.
Well, making the film and making visible the stories of the people who were a part of the production of the phone, the recycling of the phone, that I hope will move the needle. And your film may be a couple years old, but it's extremely relevant now. And we need to just keep sharing it. And people have been asking, okay, wait, I didn't see the film. How do I see it? How do I share it? So I want to mention right now, Bulldog Films has the film, and also
Bullfrog. It's also, you can get it on iTunes or Google Play, or if you go to the website, deathbydesignfilm.com, you can find out how to see it, but just go to iTunes. It's there.
And yes, I mean, so I hope that people
will. Ironically, there's never, I mean, good for them for not censoring it there.
Well, they didn't promote it. The distributor tried very hard to get them to, you know, put it in top documentaries of the month, and it didn't get there.
Not going
to
happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I often think there should be, just like we want transparency, you know, we talk all about transparency, but where's the transparency with our phone, with our electronics? But what happened to get it to this place, and where's it going to go when we're done? We should have those stories right in front of us. So that we know, so that we do make those changes, so that we're not just getting the new one, throwing it away, buying something we don't need, which there's so much of that, because we just don't need most of this stuff. Now we've got the Internet of Things with billions and billions of new devices that they're planning that are just ridiculous.
I could not agree more.
Wireless diapers, the thing talking to the thing in the house, this and that. You know, it's taking us away from real relationships, or even.
It's so funny. Someone in my office loves telling Siri to put on National Public Radio or something when she's at home. And I said, is it really too hard just to like turn on your radio? And I have an internet radio, but you know, just turn it on. And there's something very satisfying for some people to have this sort of latest technology and control, and
Well, we need to shift, just like we've shifted things in the past by talking about it. So I have a comment and question. Since the toxic impact of all industries are problematic to all life, don't we need to stop development and shift to focusing on simplifying and detoxifying industry? I've simplified and find more joy and health in my life, which is what we were just talking about. But how do we have the companies detoxify and hold them accountable? You talked about how these are American companies that have moved to other countries where they have less regulations. How can we address this? This is an international situation. It's transnational.
Well, who is Apple responsible to? Their shareholders. It's capitalism. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as their shareholders are demanding sizable, chunky profits, I don't think we're going to get anywhere. Sorry to be a little pessimistic.
I mean, if Tim Cook wanted to discontinue an Apple product because he thought that it was problematic for the planet, I don't think the shareholders would let him. So,
you know,
we have to find a way to transform the system. And part of this is, you know, consumers are you know, they're the ones buying these products. Apple AirPods are a flat out unethical product to own. It's not just Apple's fault for making a product that catches fire when you recycle it. It's consumers' fault for buying it. Mm. So that's something all of us need to find a way to adapt our purchasing behavior.
So tell me what you explain more about the AirPods, how they're unethical, that's different than other electronic devices. That
they've got three batteries. There's a battery in each earbud, and there's a battery in the case. And if you open the case and you look, there's a trash can with a line through it. You're not supposed to throw them in the trash, because in the trash truck they'll compact and it lights the trash trucks on fire. And if you Google for garbage truck fire, you will find garbage trucks catch on fire in every community. One down the street from me caught on fire last year. But you also can't run them through a recycling process. I took the AirPods to the electronics recyclers, the professional ones here in the US, and said, hey, has Apple told you how to recycle this? No. Well, let's take them apart together and see if we can find a strategy for doing it effectively. And the answer was no. They said, we never want to see these products in our recycling center. So you can't recycle them. You can't landfill them. You can keep them in your drawer, I guess. That's probably safe.
And they emit radiation right near your brain, one going to the other side and then the other going down to the phone.
It's just your brain.
Hmm?
It's just your brain.
I mean, I think maybe the easiest thing is to ask consumers to think carefully. Do you really need the latest? Do you really need, what have I got here? My MacBook Air, my phone, my husband has an iPad, two computer. I've got two computers. Like, do we need all that? Seems essential to me at this point, but actually I could probably, I've never bought an iPad. I just never could see why on earth I would need it.
Well, my contrarian view on this is I think that we should have technology. I think we should have computers. We're talking via Zoom.
Sure.
This is enriching our lives. This certainly helped us get through COVID. But we have to realize there's a significant cost. There's an environmental cost. There's a human cost, material cost to get that product all the way to us. And so once we have it, let's use it as long as we possibly can. Let's get the most utility out of the harm that we know had to happen in order to get that done. And then let's also work on mitigating that harm and creating the first green computer. But in the meantime, and this is all about, consume less, like let's have fewer things that last longer.
Right, right. So someone asked, we're gonna also put this up, these quick tips that how to prolong your cell phone's lifespan. You can preserve the battery by dimming your screen. Now, using Ethernet connections uses less energy than wireless or Wi-Fi or cellular. Quitting apps, uninstalling apps you're not using, upgrading your device's software when a new version becomes available, turn it on airplane mode more often if you're not using it for a long period of time, and try to charge your phone at around 50%. What have I missed here and the personal side? And then I want to jump to the federal law that happened this morning. So anything else personal that we can do with our devices?
I'd say those are some reasonable ideas. Some of them are more relevant than others. Like with the newer phones, dimming the screen doesn't matter as much.
Hmm.
Don't be afraid of charging your phone all the way. That's perfectly fine. The batteries are designed to manage that. So you can plug your phone in as long as you want. Batteries are modern miracles. I would say the main thing is like your battery needs to be replaced every couple of years. So just like the tires in your car need to be changed out, I figure every 2 years, put a new battery in your phone.
And with laptops and other devices, because
anything that has a battery, the battery needs to be replaced. It's just a question of how frequently, and that's kind of how often you use it. I bet you can wait until you're frustrated that the battery isn't lasting long enough to do what you need. And then at that point, change out the battery. Just don't let that frustration cause you, my phone's battery doesn't last as long, so I'll just get a new phone. That's really, really the challenge. And then the other major thing I would say for all of us is, all that old technology that you've got sitting in a drawer, your last cell phone that you're keeping as a spare, sell it. Sell it to someone who will use it. Every used phone that we sell is maybe a new phone that we don't have to make.
So where does one sell laptops and computers?
Craigslist?
You mean just like on Craigslist or?
Yeah. sell it to whoever.
People who
actually, my husband just got a new phone, and we got it from AT&T, and it's an iPhone, but we got it from AT&T, and they gave him $150 back for it, and I don't know what they're going to do it with it, but I assume they're going to do something with it. So
they'll refurbish it and sell it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So tell us about the federal law, the New York law that was passed.
Yeah. So we're working on right to repair laws. So this is the idea that, you know, companies like Apple and Samsung and others should make available the information on parts that we need to fix our things. And so far this year, 27 different U.S. states have introduced right to repair laws. The bill passed in the New York Senate pretty overwhelmingly last week. Unfortunately, we ran out of time with our equivalent bill in the Assembly, and we didn't make it through the Assembly at time this year. But we're looking forward in New York to trying again next year. But our longtime sponsor of the bill in the New York legislature is now in Congress, Representative Joe Morelli. And he just introduced a national right to repair bill today. So we're really excited about that. It's been endorsed by a variety of repair groups. Consumer Reports is really excited about it and has endorsed it. Digital advocacy organizations like the Electronic Frontier Foundation. So we're excited to see what we can do with it.
Can you tell us more about it's the Fair Repair Bill. Can you tell us what it would mean if it passed?
Yeah, absolutely. So fundamentally, it's about equal access to, you know, parts, tools, and information. So I can share my screen if that's helpful. I have slides.
Sure.
So this is the idea with Right to Repair, is if you're making a product, like make the parts available. If you have an iPhone, the iPhone has special screws on the bottom of it, which we opened up in the film. We should have access to those tools. And then information, you know, schematics, service manuals, that kind of thing. Here are the states that have considered, the red states considered right to repair bills so far this year. And you know, there's a lot going on. The Federal Trade Commission came out and released a big report talking about this and concluded that overwhelmingly repair restrictions are anti-consumer. They're you know, manufacturers have disrupted the market by monopolizing access to repair. So they're weighing in. And it's not just in the US, the European Parliament voted in favor of right to repair this last fall, starting with appliances. They're going to expand it out from there. Canada, 2 weeks ago, the Canadian Parliament voted unanimously for a copyright reform that will enable repair, which we're really excited about. They said this seems like a consensus issue. It wasn't just liberals. It wasn't just conservatives, bipartisan. The Australian Productivity Commission just released a report going into kind of details on repair restrictions, obstacles to people extending product lifespans, very similar to what the Federal Trade Commission did. This phenomenal 300 and something page report just came out. I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, but I searched for iFixit in the document. We came up 45 times, so they're clearly listening. In the state of Massachusetts last November, voters got to vote on the ballot for an automotive right to repair initiative that would like make sure that you had access to the data that's coming off of your cars. And you can see defeated the auto manufacturers by a large margin, 75% of people voting for this. Despite the car manufacturers spending $25 million to stop this legislation, it still passed. The Wall Street Journal, of all people, has come out in favor of this because farmers are being impacted because they can't fix their tractors. The New York Times has endorsed. This is the New York Times editorial board endorsing the concept. So, and all of this, by the way, has happened after the film. So the film like really kind of helped set the stage for a lot of this kind of discussion that we're seeing.
Really exciting.
Yeah. Sue didn't know half of that.
I didn't know half of that. It's really exciting.
Sue's focused on another film now. I mean, you go on a project and you're laser focused. I know we haven't had a chance to talk in a couple of years. So I have stayed laser focused on this while you've been keeping China accountable.
Yeah, I've been keeping China in my
That is just incredible. The power of the film and the stories. When you tell stories and just uncover things that people aren't aware of, it's so powerful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that everybody watched and it's joined the conversation this evening. It's really it's very gratifying.
Well, I have a couple more questions briefly before our time is up, because I'm looking forward to also putting this out. So everyone who's on the call, we will have this out so that you can share it with your in your community, with your friends and family, and also provide a link to the film. Germany had a birth to grave cost included in the product's purchase price, George asks. Couldn't that provide a prepaid recycling arrangement?
Yeah, I mean, this is like extended producer responsibility where you pay up front for the recycling and long term. And this is the case. Like, I'm in California, and when you buy a television in California, you pay a recycling fee as part of that. Probably, you know, the single most successful consumer product recycling regime is for lead acid car batteries. They have, I think, the highest recycling rate of just about anything. And I think it's because almost everywhere you buy a lead acid car battery, and there's like a $20 deposit that you have to pay, and it's enough money that everybody takes their old battery back. So absolutely, there are ways of doing
this. Well, when you know, there's a tax on smoking for the healthcare, and I don't see why we're not charging more. It would also decrease our use of ridiculous things. It's just going to come down to money. One of the things that struck me in the film was how the cost of compliance was
wasn't even worth it, right?
Was it worth it for the companies? Yeah. So they were just violating the laws. You were showing the water. I'm sure there are a lot of other laws that were being violated. And they were just paying the fines if they got caught, because it was simply cheaper to break the law and they were putting the water. I mean, they were, for folks who are not watching, who haven't watched the film yet, I know some of you haven't because you're just fabulously interested in this conversation, but the companies were having them use tap water when they were testing for the clean water. Can you talk about the compliance and the money and the legal issues here and that the cost of compliance versus the...
You know, talking about laws and compliance in China is really, really complicated, because it's not very formalized. You know, it's really who you know. It's, you know, the local Communist Party cadre has to get X many points for his work in, probably he, because not many women are in government, you know, has to get X many points to keep his status in the party. So you have to get X many points for your work in the environment. It used to be enforcing the one child policy. It's for having construction sites. It's for finding new buildings that you can build. So it's very, it's not a system that is in any way comparable to anywhere else, because it's usually about how do you keep the local Communist Party cadres happy and in good favor. So of course the workers are going to put tap water in the water. You know, if they know the inspector is coming, of course they're going to put tap water. Like, why would you leave dirty water in your taps? I mean, you know, so it's very hard to talk in a kind of, you know, it works like this, this, and this. Sorry to be a little vague there, but it's just often hard to figure out how things work in China.
About the toxic sites in the United States that you showed at the beginning of the movie? What's happening with those Superfund sites?
I guess they're still being cleaned up. Interestingly enough, it was almost as bad as filming in China, filming in Silicon Valley. We spent a day with Ted Smith going, you know, doing his Silicon Valley toxic tour, where he took us around all the old sites. And then, and everywhere we went, there was so much security and so many cameras that we would be asked to leave. We were asked to leave numerous times. And the law about filming in this country is if you're standing on a public road, you have the right to film. And when we got to Google, security guards came out and with cameras, and they asked what we were doing. They took pictures of our rental car license plates. And my crew actually got quite intimidated. And I just got really cross, because they had no right to do that to us. So you know, that's the biggest, the site of the biggest and worst Superfund site is in Google headquarters. And there has been local reporting on it. And I wouldn't begin to know if Google's started to clean up, but I suspect not.
So is it coming up like when you showed an Endicott through the
earth,
the soil, mm-hmm. and right there where Google's mm-hmm. building is?
Yeah, because they are on the where I think it was Fairchild Electronics was. They built Google on the exact site of a former electronics factory that was, you know, is a Superfund site. I don't know. I Kyle, do you have any idea how in California you can build a new building on a Superfund site? I have right. no idea.
Yeah, I mean, they attempt to mitigate it. And I mean, there's the xenon. Yeah, I mean, it's challenging.
It's almost impossible to clean these sites up. I mean, it's, you know, when these chemicals are seeping through the soil, like how do you catch them? It's major, major, major engineering.
Wow. So I'm just looking, please put your questions in the Q&A or in the chat. And Kyle, a question was asked, did you use the film to make headway on the bills?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We promoted the film heavily, you know, e-waste, working on both the e-waste and the, you know, the issues around this. I would say, like, it took us a long time to get the environmental movement to get, you know, consensus around product life extension as a fundamental environmental strategy. And this film was really helpful in that, you know, we got, I think probably around the time the film came out, maybe after that, Greenpeace got a lot more involved. Yeah. So it was helpful to have, you know, more allies. And now, I mean, there's consensus, like the NRDC is helping with the New York bill. And you know, so it's nice to have more folks engaged and involved. And then, I mean, that's not to mention, like what we've been talking about everything but climate change right now. If we could make all of the phones in the US last a year longer, it would be the equivalent of taking 600,000 cars off the road.
Wow.
So we're talking about water in Taiwan, but the bigger impact is actually the electricity that goes into making these chips. These chips are just incredibly energy intensive to etch. And so once we have done that, there's no reason a silicon chip can't last 20, 30 years. And instead we're using our phones for two. So let's make them last a little longer.
Mm-hmm. So I just for our last question, and this came up from someone, it's also my question too. So now, and I don't use wireless devices in my home, but now that everything is wireless, the washing machine, the dryer, the dishwasher and so forth, when I have repair, so I don't have anything in my home right now, but I have something that's about to break. And when our refrigerator broke and we were trying to figure out what to do and almost got a new refrigerator, I had a hard time finding one that didn't have antennas on it, that wasn't smart. Yeah. And the men who came over to fix the old one, and this tallies into your question, Pam, who asked the question, but he was like talking, there's this circuit board, even in the one that didn't have the wireless, but the new ones, they were just shaking their head. They were like, yeah, no, that people don't even know how to fix the newer one. It's a whole different situation. So my question is, can you talk about that? And also, do you know how to get, and is Fixit doing a situation where you're able to get the antennas out of these smart devices for people who don't want to be tracked and don't want to have the wireless radiation? Is there a place that's teaching that where you don't lose the warranty?
Well, warranty is a separate discussion, but didn't we, I mean, we popped open phones. Did we talk about disabling antennas and phones when we were working together, Sue?
No.
I don't know. Because I feel like this was around the Snowden kind of time frame. You can physically disconnect antennas if you need to. I mean, it's kind of technical, but it can be done. I would say, you know, most, like my refrigerator doesn't have, it actually has some smart diagnostics on it, but it doesn't have any wireless. It's got a microphone. And if you need to talk to tech support, you hold your phone up to this microphone and it can talk back and forth that way. But sound waves are the extent of its wireless technologies. So you can get, you know, relatively dumb electronics. I would certainly advocate for that. There's no reason that you should you should need a refrigerator that can talk to the internet. So the older products that you get, the better, I would say. The older ones last longer.
We have a TV that I got at the yard sale for my second monitor, but it's got wireless in it, which I don't need.
They don't sell TVs anymore that are not smart TVs that don't. But yeah, I would never, and purely for internet security reasons, I would never hook a TV up to the internet.
So they don't sell TVs that aren't smart TVs.
No, because the advertising, this is going to sound like a conspiracy theory, but it's not. The advertisers actually subsidize the price of the new TVs. So they watch what you're watching, and then they, like the Nielsen ratings, they report it back. So like, I mean, Vizio has admitted this is how they work. They so if you never connect your TV to the internet, they don't know what you're watching. And then, yeah, like Sue would like to know who all watched her film. That would probably be helpful knowledge to a filmmaker, right? You don't have that information. So ratings are helpful information, people.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Netflix won't reveal those numbers, right? I mean, we don't really know the truth about anything anymore.
Right. You
know, so
yeah. This is true. Hard to even know when you think you might know what the truth is, when people think they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
So where is the link to the movie? I've gotten a couple of these, and we, you have it. It's on iTunes.
It's on Google Play. It's on, if you go to deathbydesignfilm.com, let me just, I have to leave the screen.
I gave the wrong URL. Death by Design Film, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And on Bullfrog, Bullfrog also has Ovid, which is like Netflix, where you can watch documentaries. You pay a fee like you would with Netflix, but it has these incredible environmental health and the environment documentaries. It's absolutely fabulous. I just learned about it when we connected with them on streaming. Yeah. And I'll be sure to put a link up as well in our write-up so people can check that out too.
Bullfrog's a wonderful company. They've worked so hard with this film. It's been really, they're terrific.
They really are. I could do this. I mean, the movies that they have too are just fabulous.
Yeah.
Sue, have you seen eLife?
No.
eLife was a documentary, kind of more a little focused on the e-way side of things that came out a few years after yours. Huh. And I would say watch this film first, but then if you want to learn more about electronic waste and sort of the inside side of things, look at the eLife film.
Okay.
So I put again in the chat the Death by Design link, and
it's deathbydesignfilm.com.
Yeah, Death by Design Film. Yeah, I got it wrong, and then I got it right, and then you got it wrong.
Oops, I got it wrong. So, let me put it in there. Thanks to everyone for coming out, and I think I covered all of your questions. And we will get this up online so people can continue to learn about it and share it. Thank you so much for joining me, Sue and Kyle.
Thank you so much for having us. And thank you all so much for being interested and caring about this.
And thank you, Kyle. And how do people keep up with the legislation and involved in that?
Yeah, hop on iFixit. You can sign up for our email list. We'll keep you in the loop. You can also, if you want to get more engaged, repair.org is the advocacy organization that is fighting for your rights.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Good night. To see you again, Sue.
Thanks, yeah, lovely everybody. To see you too. Be in touch.
Yeah.
Bye.